At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey everybody, what up? Welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. Yes, I'm Michael Steele. It's such a pleasure having you in the house. Here we are some 2 weeks after the election of elections, and the elections are still going on. Well, at least some version of it is still going on. So glad you could join us, though. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you get your podcast on. And of course, you know, follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. So today I wanted to do a more reflective sort of look back on the last couple of weeks and certainly all of the crap that's going on right now with Trump refusing to play the reindeer game of transition. And I couldn't think of anyone better to have this conversation with than my old partner, and just a wonderful guy, Rick Unger. Woo-hoo. Who is the host of The Rick Unger Show, a nationally syndicated two-hour political and news commentary radio show I've had the pleasure of being on. We have a lot of fun. He is a progressive. We forgive him some sins. Yes, we do. But he's made his mark in radio and television by being willing to come to the other side of the conversation and have the conversation. And that's how we started out when we had our time together on Sirius XM with Steele and Unger, which was a lot of fun. We did that for about 4 years, and we still look good. So this is good.
Well, you do.
Yeah, well, yeah.
No, you haven't grown any more hair, I've noticed, but yeah, you look good.
The hair thing doesn't come back as easy as it should.
I see.
I'm working on that.
I wouldn't know.
He was a political commentator on Forbes.com, Newsmax TV, and Forbes on Fox. But here's where I love the story of Rick Unger, and I love sharing this every time I get to introduce him. He was a Hollywood writer, producer in television, but his mark was made in the animation industry. And folks, for all of you who love Spider-Man and going to the Spider-Man movies, this is the brother who brought that to you. He is the one who revised the Spider-Man brand for Marvel and has not looked back since. And Rick, it's always a pleasure having a conversation with you, my friend.
My brother from another mother. Good to be here. Good to be here, as always.
So how are things going? I know, you know, you've had elections, you've got post-election. So have you decompressed or are you like the rest of us still drinking straight from the bottle?
Now, you know what? I think I have in some ways decompressed. I've certainly decompressed from the election. I'm kind of over it. You know, I really am. We know who won the election and one is a good.
Could you tell Trump, please?
It's not going to do any good, obviously. But, you know, I've taken some heart from these past 2 weeks because you know what we're seeing? We are seeing the guardrails of our democracy holding up.
Yeah.
He has brought 20 some cases. He has won one of them, a fairly insignificant one, I might add, having to do with votes that were set aside because people didn't bring ID. And even those were ultimately included except for 3 days worth. He's lost every lawsuit. And what that is telling us is our courts, our judges, even those who may have been appointed in some cases by a Republican governor or Trump himself, it's holding up. It's working. And I find that to be immensely heartening. What I find incredibly disheartening, and this is really where my focus has gone now, I do not object to 70-some million people voting for Donald Trump. I genuinely don't. Right. If they thought that was best for our country, then they should vote accordingly. what I am just floored by, and I'll put it to you this way, Michael, because you've heard me say this before. The only way I think our country ever comes together is if we're invaded by Mars, right? From outer space.
Some big national event has to happen, right?
Yes, and that brings us together. And yet, we have just lived through 8 months of a big, to use your words, a big national event happening that threatens each and every one of us, but it drove us further apart.
But what that speaks to is what I've been emphasizing, what I emphasized during the campaign, and certainly I think it is resolute now in the point, is leadership. The reason this big national event drove us apart is because you had a numbnut telling us not to wear masks and denigrating the science and the scientists who were trying to save lives. The reason we're sitting at 251,713 dead Americans is because we had a president who didn't give a damn about 251,713 Americans. The reason we're at 11,612,151 cases of COVID-19 is because you had an American president who didn't care about 11,612,000.
But it took more than just him. It took all of those millions of people who were willing to listen to his.
Those people have been there from the beginning, and they took their lead from him. You're right. So they're just, I mean, I never put it all on Donald Trump's shoulder. Donald Trump is an enabler. He, you know, back in the day in the neighborhood, he was the guy who would roll up on, you know, the 13-year-old kid and say, come here, I want you to do me a favor. Or, you know, hey, you need school books. Or I know you and your mom are having a hard time. I need you to do something for me. He's that guy who will always get you in trouble, right?
True.
He doesn't care about your home and your family, about your welfare. He just needs something from you.
From that standpoint,
those folks kind of fit into that box. But where does it go? Where does it take us now? We're in this transition period, and we've got to get through this. My attitude on the transition is, and I said this the other night on MS, I was like, you know, can we stop playing the reindeer game with this guy and just do it? You know, it's fine.
We have one person blocking it, or we could just do it.
Okay. You don't want to open up the GSA for us. That's fine. I got it. So do the workarounds, particularly in the COVID space, because you can't sit back and just wait for Trump, because he will wait until the 19th of January.
But I'm gonna come back to the same point with the point you're bringing up now about transition. There was a poll out yesterday that said that 70% of the nation's Republicans either feel that Biden stole the election or something to that effect, that he did not win this. A lot of them believe now he won it, but they don't believe he won it fair and square. Now, look at this. I mean, what does that tell you? I can understand how people who were loyal to Trump might have had questions at the beginning. They have somebody they believe in, Donald Trump. Right. Whether they should or shouldn't, that's a whole separate question. But they do. And if he's telling them something, their inclination is going to be to believe him, just as there are people I believe in that if they tell me something, my inclination is going to be to believe them. But we've now had 2 weeks of evidence. We've had Tucker Carlson, who thought he was being so clever when he told us about the four dead people who voted in Georgia, three of which have been disproven. They're alive. And these people still believe it. We've had court case after court case, and they refuse to step back.
So what is that? What is it so beholding to Donald Trump? Why do people look at the facts? I'm sorry, it's raining outside. And Donald Trump is saying, no, it's not raining. And they're like, well, it's not raining.
Okay, it's not raining. Yeah, I don't know how you answer that question. But I do think it's tying into the transition problem, because that one person who has to make that decision isn't just, we don't know if Donald Trump is telling her what to do or not, so I'm not going to allege that. But she is looking at some 70 million people who are watching her every move, and it's freaking her out.
She shouldn't care about 70 million people who are watching her move. She works for the people of the United States. 75 million people. Why the hell do you care about 70 million when 75 million voted for the
It's freaking her out. And this is the problem.
I don't buy the freak out. I think she's doing exactly what she's been instructed to do by the president.
But why is my question? No matter what, he can fire her, but she's only got a few more weeks of work left anyhow.
Why is she concerned about the president?
Yeah.
She don't want to be fired. She don't want the humiliation of Donald Trump tweeting some crap about her.
I don't know that that's humiliation at this point. I think at this point...
Well, it's not humiliation, but I know how GSA works. I know how the director of GSA works. They work. They do what they're instructed to do by the president of the United States.
So you're pretty convinced that she's just doing what she's told.
She's doing what she's been told to do.
Obviously, there's a good chance you're right.
She is not acting as an independent player here. She's supposed to, but she's not acting as an independent player where... She could take the easy out. I mean, this is not like this is complicated. Right. The easy out is, okay, the election, the counting is still going, but the preponderance of the evidence shows that Joe Biden is going to be the next president. So while that count's going on, why don't we go ahead and you can begin the transition? Because that's easy to stop if it turns out the other way.
And let's not forget the definition of what her job is supposed to be. It's the apparent winner. It's not the winner.
Thank you.
It's the apparent winner. Well, by any objective standard, I suppose it could change, but Joe Biden is the apparent winner.
And so as a consequence of that apparentness, she has decided that she's going to take her marching order not from the regs that control her actions, right? But from the man sitting in the White House, the petulant little 12-year-old who's stomping his feet like a child in the middle of a mall, screaming about he won his toys. So the reality of it is, you know, the country again is getting whipsawed back and forth. I still want to know who these 7 out of 10 Republicans are. I really want to know where in the country they're going to do this polling, because you know, come to the Washington suburbs, come to you know other parts of the. I just want to know where these people are coming from, who are sitting there going, you know, you line up 7, 10 Republicans, and seven of them are saying, yeah, this is okay.
And what
it makes
and
no that's sense.
It. And that is, to me, this all comes back to that same point. This is what is so scary about it. Whether you wanted Donald Trump to win, whether you didn't, whether you think he did or whether you think he didn't, these are 7 out of 10 Republicans who are saying, I am willing to allow the rules to be violated by top government officials to get in the way of the peaceful transfer of power in this country, which has always been the hallmark of this country. I am willing to let that all go down the drain right now. I'm not sure I know why I am, right? Because Donald Trump wants me to.
So what does it tell you that law firms are pulling out of representing Trump in court cases?
Would you have taken that case?
Oh, hell no.
Exactly.
But they did.
No, they did.
They
saw the money.
And it was because of groups like the Lincoln Project and others who said, wait a minute, time out. America, can we put a little spotlight on what these mofos are doing? Because you said it. They saw the money.
Yeah.
They saw, well, we know this case is for shit and we know what the outcome's going to be, but we could make about 40 or 50 million between now and December.
Okay. Good for our year and a tough year.
So then you've got that. But then you had this, you know, who is this Mark Scaringi? he's an attorney, for Harrisburg, PA, attorney, conservative talk radio host and former Senate candidate, is now taking over Trump's case, I guess, along with...
I think that's...
Rudy Giuliani.
Rudy went into court.
Dumb and Dumber coming to represent
Clearly, could you imagine being, forget the president of the United States. Let's say you own a small business on Main Street and you got a problem and you go, I know what I'm going to do. This is going to trial. I can't settle it. I'm going to go out and hire a guy who hasn't been in a courtroom for 40 years. Perfect. That is the answer. This is where they're at. And that's why I say I'm not worrying about the election. The election's going to take care of itself.
Well, I need you to talk to some of the people who've been texting me this morning talking about, are you sure? What's going on in Michigan? Are you sure that the Republicans aren't going to steal this election? So let's talk about Michigan. The okay. situation in Michigan, to me, among so many other disturbing things, is for all you the 18% of black men who voted for Donald Trump, this is what we were trying to tell your ass. Okay? All right? So for the 8% of black women that voted for Donald Trump, this is what we were trying to tell your ass. All right? So you saw this week two of the four canvassers in Michigan, the two Republican canvassers decided.
Just say it. The two white people on the two on white, the board. The two Actually, white Republicans. There's three white people on the board.
The two white Republicans decided that they were not going to certify the election in Michigan's most populous county because of anomalies. But they would certify
Livonia,
the rest of the state.
There is a city
where all
right
the white
next,
folks live.
That's right. There is
they
a
would
city.
Certify that, but we're not going to certify where 8 out of 10 citizens are black.
It was remarkable.
That place would be called Detroit.
My favorite part of this, I got to tell you, I lived in Detroit for a number of years.
I know, that's why I figured you would love this Wayne County story.
There is another little city in Wayne County called Livonia. It is right next door to Detroit whatever the word is. It's divided by Woodward Avenue. In Livonia, they had almost the identical polling discrepancies, right? I think they were off by 2. And these two people certified Livonia. Now, Livonia is as white as the new car I'm buying, okay? It is white. Go figure that Detroit is black, and the same number of polling discrepancies were reason for them to want to throw in the towel on that. Now, here's the best part. I don't know. I just heard this. We know they changed their mind.
Right.
But they have now filed affidavits, the two of them, seeking to change their mind back again.
That's because they got political pressure to change their mind.
Yeah, that's what they're saying in their affidavits.
They saw the outrage from the country. Look, they have no credibility. They can file an affidavit and sign it in friggin' blood. I don't give a shit. It doesn't matter. You exposed your racist ass. We know what your game plan was. You wanted to steal votes from black folks. You wanted to decertify the black vote in Detroit. That is that simple. Yep. And let's just call it what it is and stop pretending that it's anything else. So for all you folks out there sitting there talking about Donald Trump cares about he's done so much for black people. Yeah. Until the vote comes in. And all of a sudden now it's like, well, no, y'all don't get to vote in this county. But all the white folks around you, their votes can.
They're
can,
all good.
Go, they're all good. So,
and by the way, I think people should be aware what we're talking about here is a discrepancy of 320 votes.
Yes. Out of what it was, the margin in Michigan right now, something like 15 something thousand.
Nothing that can be overcome. Let's put it that way.
So, but what is that? But what does that say about what Trump is looking to do? And I think we really need to contextualize this as much as possible. This is all a continuation of the effort to deconstruct the administrative state. This is all to cast serious doubts. Now, some, 50% of those who voted, who support Donald Trump, walking around believing that this election was rigged, it was stolen, and the process was used against him. How this has been the most transparent of all of our elections. I mean, you had secretaries of states months ago telling people what the process was going to be, showing, you know, hey, putting cameras in the voting in the counting rooms. What does that say about us, Rick? What are we really that desperate and gullible at this point in the country?
I think it says one important thing about Republicans. I'm going to be anxious to see your reaction to it because you were in the ultimate place to know. I have long believed that a key to the Republicans' approach to elections is voter suppression. And what you're seeing right now in these efforts that are failing around the country is taking voter suppression to its ultimate result. If we couldn't stop you from voting, no matter how hard we tried, well, we'll take it to the next step. We will just do everything we can not to count your vote if it didn't go our way.
Well, I'm not going to argue.
That raises a question for you.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you. I mean, look, that was part of my battles at the RNC was, even though that was not a term that was used. But remember, my goal was to expand the vote.
Right.
You know,
I do remember.
My goal was, you know, I wasn't my argument since I was a county chairman in 1994 has always been, let me make my case. I will ride or die on my case to the people in my community. So, because I want everybody to vote. I think everybody should vote. And if I fail to make my case, then I won't earn your vote.
Well, what's so remarkable, I totally take your point, but what makes it even more remarkable, if either party, certainly in recent history, should be going the direction of voter suppression, shouldn't be the Republicans, because I don't care what anybody says, this country has been and remains a center-right country.
Thank you, it is. Yep.
Therefore, you know, it's stacked in your direction. And you end up, I mean, look what happened. You've got the Secretary of State in Georgia saying now that Donald Trump did himself in. When he mounted this whole thing against mail-in ballots, he said,
yes,
those people who didn't send it in because Donald Trump told them not to, they didn't show up at the polls on election day.
They didn't show up at the polls on election day.
So he shot himself in the foot on Fifth Avenue.
And we, as much as I did not want Donald Trump to win, I was very clear in reminding voters and reminding his supporters that to listen to him is to lose the election because we have been voting by mail as part of our political infrastructure for at least 70 years. But more specifically, in the last 30 years, we have integrated it into our get out the vote effort. We've integrated it into our micro-targeting efforts. We've integrated it into our canvassing efforts. It is a part of
what you do
to get your, how do you think Republicans win these races, particularly down ballot races? Because you have this built-in infrastructure.
I got to tell you something. I've been surprised, as much as I can't seem to go anywhere without reading something about you or seeing your face on TV. It's getting a little disgusting, frankly.
I'm sorry. I
thank God Steve Kornacki is now the new poster boy, right?
But
I've been surprised that nobody has talked to you about your experiences when you were chairman of the Get Out the Vote PAC for the National Republican Party.
I know.
You've been there, and they have not talked to you about what your take and what you did on absentee voting.
It still stuns me sometimes. I think a lot of people kind of look and they see, you know, you're the former chairman of the RNC. I say, yeah, but I was also the chairman of GOPAC, you know, so I was all about finding the candidates and building a ground game strategy around voting and voting turnout. So to get those candidates elected. Yep. But yeah, they're lost, not mine.
They kind of missed that.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break. We are talking to my buddy. I mean, you can tell folks how quick, when Rick and I get going, we get going, right? And we're already.
Hey, isn't it nice, though, that we might be soon returning to a time where we can disagree again?
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? Because I still say you are so wrong on healthcare. But, you are so wrong on healthcare. And I won't even start to talk about the environment. Oh, my God.
And, you know, I'm not an environment freak.
Hey, no, he's not. No, he's not. Trust me. And I think Rick and I, we may agree more on the environment than we do on healthcare. Yeah. But although you have convinced me of some points on healthcare, I will concede that.
You've convinced me of none.
But I know that's why you're progressive. Can't talk to you. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have more with the incomparable Rick Unger right after this.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
All right, folks, like I said, we are hanging with my main man, Rick Unger. You know the conversation. We've only been away for a few minutes, so we can just pick right back up. So we were talking about Georgia. Let's go a little bit deeper into Georgia. So, because I love the point, the important point about what's happening in Georgia is the fact that the absentee vote by mail ballots really kind of made the difference. But now we're in a special election in Georgia for the United States Senate, Perdue versus Ossoff, Warnock versus Loeffler. What's your assessment?
It kind of changes from day to day, to be perfectly honest with you. I started out thinking, you know what, because Georgia went the way it appears to have gone in the presidential election, everybody's hopeful about the Democrats there. I thought, you know, it's going to be another one of those down ballot things where they're still going to vote for the Republicans. I still probably think that. If I had to bet money today, I still say the Republicans are probably going to win. But I do think that there is a chance for the two Democratic candidates. And I think Donald Trump right now, frankly, is doing everything in his power to help out the two Democrats. It's, I think, a measuring stick is going to be when we start seeing polls, if we can see polls and if we can believe a poll any longer, how people are responding to the Secretary of State down there. He's taken a very strong position. He's playing it down the middle. He's being open and honest about things that are happening. Right. If Republicans down there listen to him and believe him, that works for the two Democratic candidates. If they're blowing him off, and I don't know if they are or if they aren't, then I don't know if it helps.
I don't know. You know, I think that's spot on analysis. My take is a little different, though. I don't know. I don't know that much about elections. I have no idea.
Elections? What's that?
Elections.
Come on. You ran for senior class president in high school. You know elections.
Yeah, but then all I had to do was promise bubble gum. You know?
I think you probably lost, but you know, I gave out cigarettes in the bathroom.
Well,
you
see
gave
that,
out bubble gum. That's the difference
you go.
Between us.
You know, actually, it actually worked. I tell you why. What I did was better than what you did, because invariably you didn't say what kind of cigarettes you were handing out.
Oh no, they were legit cigarettes.
but the kids always needed the bubble gum so the teacher wouldn't smell the cigarettes,
on their breath.
Right. So yeah, the bubble gum king. Yeah, that was me, baby.
Okay, I got you.
Stood outside that bathroom after they came out. Here you go.
You're gonna need this.
Yeah, you're going to need this, and I'm going to need your vote. So here's my take on it is this. Okay, so I agree with the first part that if the election is held in the traditional model of things, the Republican wins because it's Georgia. They have a built-in advantage politically because it's Georgia. But the variables on the ground there make this a little bit more hanky than normal. One, is you rightly noted, is Donald Trump himself, who has done everything in his power to lose not only his election, but everyone else's.
Yeah.
Because this is why he has. How do you now come back on the back end if you're the state party of Georgia after listening to Trump on the front end about mail-in ballots and say, okay, everybody, we need you to vote by mail.
Right.
Well, your voting base believes that that's a corrupt process. So why would I participate in a corrupt process? So I'm going to go show up at the polls. This okay, great. Point. The problem with showing up at the poll in January in Georgia is not a good proposition.
That's because, actually a really good point.
And so the reality is, particularly for the central part of the base vote for Republicans, whether it's Georgia or Florida or New York or California, are senior voters. A senior citizen is going to be hard-pressed in the middle of what will be an exploding pandemic round three by the time we get to January, given all the current projections, right? Yeah. Remember, Trump will still be president, people. So battling COVID-19 will be as you were, right?
That's right. Nothing's
going to change. So now you're telling your seniors to go out into the cold of Georgia at whatever that weather pattern is that day, stand in a line for however long you're going to stand in the line to vote in a special election.
Good point. Very good point.
Well, the Democrats,
that is a problem,
have already started their get out the vote effort through the vote by mail process, telling people to request their ballots. They started that last week, requesting ballots. Stacey Abrams, point four, Stacey Abrams has put down such an incredible program strategy, actually, of turning up and turning out the Democratic vote in the state with the battle cry, remember 2018.
Yeah.
Remember how they stole it. So I think the dynamics in Georgia actually favor the Democrats. Now, there's some, Rick, who'll say they don't see this thing splitting, you know, a Democrat, Republican. It's either all Democrat or all Republican. I think I agree with that in the main, but I also can see a scenario in which Ossoff loses to Perdue and Warnock wins over Loeffler.
I am among those who see that as unlikely. I don't think they will split.
Yeah, I don't. I can see it, but I don't think they will. But if it happens,
yeah,
that's
how you think it would go. I get that. But you know, you got to wonder about Perdue. It did not do him in the general election. That there were all these questions about the propriety of his stock trades. But right. There were more that came out in the last day or two. I don't know if Georgia cares. I really don't.
They
I mean,
probably don't. Trump has been president. They don't care about your stock trades.
Yeah, I guess not. I mean, nobody in South Carolina cared about Lindsey Graham. So, you know, they sent him back. So I guess nobody cares. But I don't know. You know, it's funny. I look at Perdue and I go, gee, I would have thought he was a little too slick for Georgia voters. And I wonder if Ossoff can bring that feeling to the fore. It's going to be interesting. I Ossoff is an interesting candidate. He would not have been my first choice, by the way. I like him, but he lost his race for Congress not very long ago. This is not who I tend to like to choose to run for a higher office.
Right.
So, you know, I think he's a little bit flawed in that respect. Warnock, I think he's a great candidate.
Right.
So maybe that could be why you're saying
he is the pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church, which is historic. And, you know, that's going to have a lot of resonance with voters. So to your point, if it's looking good for Warnock, I think it'll look good for Ossoff. Although I do see that scenario. Why I don't necessarily subscribe to it fully, I do still see that scenario where the voters.
Yeah, I see your point on
decide
that.
Decide to split this baby to give a win to the Dems and give a win to the Republicans. But that then puts in play a very interesting dynamic.
It gives new meaning to purple state, doesn't it?
It gives new meaning to purple state, but it also changes the calculations in the Senate.
Mm. Yeah, huge.
You know, and
who's the if that happens and we're at 49-49, who is the Republican the Democrats are going to try and pull over with offers of wonderful things?
Well, they don't necessarily need them because you still have the vice president. So the vice president will be voting on every vote.
Yeah, but if it's 51, What would it be? Would it be 51-48?
If it's tied in the Senate, then the
if
vice
it's at 50-50, yes, that's now it's the Democrats have control.
Right.
But let's say if the Republican and the Democrat of one each wins in Georgia, what does that make it?
It should make it 50-50.
No, not if one of each.
Right.
Wins.
Well,
that gives the control. That makes it 51.
Because what is it now? 52-48, something like that.
Is that what
you got? Remember, you got the independent that sides with the Democrats.
Right. Not sure, but I don't think it could be tied though, because you got 100 senators, and if one of these. But I do see where the Republicans could end up. I think it's 49. I think it ends up 51-49. And in that case, they're going to be looking for a Republican that they can pull over. They are going to offer committee chairmanship. They are going to offer a home in Boca. I mean, they're going to be offering everything, because that would make it 50-50. Who is that Republican in the Senate?
Probably or who someone is the who Democrat want to go back that the, to the Senate after?
Who's the Democrat that the Republicans are going to try and pull over? But we all know who that is.
Well, that kind of Manchin. Yeah, Manchin. Yeah. That reminds. But that brings me to the point. Despite our failure to do math,
notice that we both absolutely suck at doing the math.
Moved on. Yeah, because I was confused. Yeah, so it's 51. It'll be a 51-49.
Yeah.
In that situation. As opposed to
50-50.
Yeah, well, if they take these two seats, they'll have 48. Yeah, right. So anyway, math class is over. that leads to the question about Joe Biden. It's a two-parter. What do you think of how Joe is handling the transition, and what do you think Joe Biden should be doing? Based on how he's handling the transition.
Well, here's the most interesting part of that question to me. When was the last time you heard anybody discuss how a president-elect was handling the transition?
You never. Right. People were like, okay, let me know when the inauguration is.
Right. The only time I can recall ever hearing it discussed is when Trump won and he fired his entire transition team.
Yeah, well.
And all of the work they did went into a garbage can. Other than
telltale signs, folks.
Exactly. So, you know, the fact that we're asking that question, I think, is pretty interesting. But I think, yeah, he's, from what I can see, he's handling it just fine. But, you know, ask me 3 months in if he has if he's adequately handled his staffing, and then we'll have a better answer. But here's a question I got along those lines for you. Will Joe Biden pick up on this new thing that Trump put into place and have acting secretaries of state to avoid problems with the Senate?
I don't think so.
I hope not.
Yeah, I don't think so. And the reason I don't think so is because that's you can't govern that way. You need someone on the point to make the day-to-day management decisions, et cetera, et cetera. And an acting can't do that. An acting has to go to the president, because the president is his boss. What ordinarily would be the secretary.
Right. So, and by the way, it also, just as an aside, completely thwarts the constitutional design.
Well, right. Well, there is that. And that course leads to the question about what will the relationship between Biden and the Senate be? A, it depends on who's in control. All right. So let's assume status quo ante. And that means that Majority Leader McConnell is still in charge. What do you assess on that relationship? How do you assess that?
It's tough. I mean, you know, we all know there's an underlying good thing there. I think they do get along. They've had years of serving together. But I don't think that is going to trump, to use the word, the realities. You know, this is the same Mitch McConnell who the night before the Obama inauguration held a meeting to talk about how they were going to thwart everything Obama wanted to do.
Right.
Mitch McConnell, first and foremost, I believe he's dedicated to his own power. Secondly, to keep that power, he has to be dedicated to the constant reelection of his members. They view constant reelection of the Republican members as sticking at this point primarily with the Trump perspective, because that's who they believe their voters are. I don't see him giving an inch to Joe Biden.
So I see that slightly different. I think he does. I think he does.
Right.
Well, and the reason I think he does is Republicans are going to need a win. They can't, they will not be able to get away with doing to Joe Biden what they did to Barack Obama. In the sense that they, you know, the margins are too close in the House. The margins are way too close in the Senate. And they don't want to be the party that, well, you know, from McConnell's standpoint, he'd rather have a clear and clean majority where he doesn't have to look over his shoulder and worry about peeling off, you know, a Susan Collins or someone like that on these issues. And I think for them, they want to be able to roll into 22 because Joe Biden, you're not going to be able to get away with the, you know, socialism argument with Joe Biden. You're just not.
No, you're not.
You know, as much as people, you know, and I had this ongoing argument with some, you know, grassroots activists here in the state on this. I was like, you know, show me where you have lost any of your rights under any Democratic president.
Right.
Just tell me where you've lost your right. Any
but you
right.
You understand
just
it.
Right.
It doesn't matter. They are still going to call him
a socialist.
They're not going to call him a socialist. They're going to call him a puppet.
Right.
Of the progressive socialist wing of the party.
Right. So I think that'll probably be what it is. But I think that there is more in the relationship, the personal relationship between the two men than anything else.
I hope you're right.
They've known each other a long time. Mitch McConnell knows what Joe Biden is not. And Mitch McConnell knows that at the end of the day, they will align a lot closer on issues than not. And I think the leadoff issue for Joe Biden, let coronavirus do that process, take care of that.
Right.
But the lead-off policy issue has to be infrastructure.
Interesting.
Because that's the thing that breaks the process open. In other words, it pulls people out of their respective
right. You can come at
demagogic
that from either
corners.
Side.
Right. Right.
That's actually that would be a good thing. It would be a huge win if he could get something through. We'll see. Again, that's very hopeful to me, and I hope that's what happens. We can't go on this way. We truly can't go on this way. And as you correctly pointed out, the margins have gotten incredibly small in the House.
Right.
This election was absolutely stunning. I keep comparing it to, you know, you always have that big present you want on Christmas morning.
Right.
This is like getting that big present. But then everything else you got was clothes or socks.
Right, right, right.
That's what this election was like.
So you just ride the bike and like the clothes you like ignore. So why was that? What made that happen the way it did? How did the Republicans in the face of everything else pick up 11 House seats? Was it an effective job of plastering Democratic incumbents with defund the police and, you know, they're all socialists?
You're asking the question that is roiling the Democratic Party, because if you are a more moderate Democrat, as I fully admit that I am, I would answer what you just said is yes, it mm-hmm. was poor sloganeering like defund the police. And mm-hmm. you know, nobody, so many of these people who voted, even the ones who voted for Biden, they are still center right. And you say things like defund the police, you're going to have a problem. You really
right.
are. But now if you talk to the progressive side of the party, they are going to say, no, you don't get it. You never offered our progressive point of view. You never, despite the fact that we know from the polls, there was a recent Kaiser poll that the majority of the country favors Medicare for all, you never campaigned on it. You didn't campaign on it for president. You didn't campaign on it in your congressional races. That's why. You lost seats.
You know what that sounds like? It sounds like all of those conservatives after Bob Dole,
that's right.
after John McCain, after Mitt Romney, saying you did not run on the conservative platform. You did not run on abortion. You did not run on the Second Amendment. You did not run. And that's why you didn't win. And I would look at them and go, while I agree with you on abortion and I agree with you on the Second Amendment, that's not where
that's
the
not
country
why
was.
You didn't win.
That's not why you didn't win.
No, it's going to be, I mean, I see it whipping up every day. Progressives are blaming the moderates. The moderates are blaming the progressives. It's just going to be a mess.
So
and
who,
I'll tell you what, you want a prediction right here?
Yeah.
Republicans are going to win the House next time around.
Well, but that kind of makes sense. It kind of trends in that direction, and particularly after this election, I would think. I mean, it'll be in the middle of the first term of the Democrat, just as it was in the middle of the first term of the Republican. The question becomes how much the Republican Party can build on that and actually make it a strong win like I did in 2010.
They got a hell
of a start.
As opposed
to just, you know, picking up, you know, having a slim majority like Nancy has right now. I'm not sold yet on the idea that the Democrats lose the House in 22. Despite that, I think I got to wait to see what the messaging is going to be, because you make the important point. If they get hung up on the messaging over socialism versus non-socialism, guns and abortion and defunding the police and all these other things, yeah, then that's going to happen. But if Joe Biden is able to kind of walk this very narrow lane and just very subtly pull voters with him, I think it makes for an interesting race. So I'm gonna wait to see where we are about this time in 21.
Yeah, and I think,
I mean, I'm not discounting your prediction.
No, I hear you. I hear you.
I think history is on your side on the prediction.
These Democrats this time around, they needed to stand up there and say, I am sick and tired of your socialism bullshit. And they needed to say it just like that.
Right.
If I'm a socialist, I would be a pretty darn, it's what I have to say all the time. When I get attacked, I go, dude, if I'm a socialist, I am a pretty poor example of it, because I don't know somebody who is more of a capitalist than I've been. I am a very failed socialist. And that's what they needed to say. And
right.
They didn't do it. They just sidestepped it and it didn't help.
Rick Unger, this is why I could just all day with Rick Unger. Man, it's a real pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Always fun.
I got like 6,000 more questions to ask, so that means I got to bring you back. We got to do another round.
Not that
of Unger and Steel. Rick, it's a real pleasure having you drop in the podcast to sort of give us some insights and some sense of where things are right now. He is the host of the Rick Unger Show. Catch him. He's nationally syndicated. Follow him on Twitter at Rick Unger. And obviously you'll get to see him. Which air are you on most these days?
Oh, probably most. I'm still on Fox.
Still on Fox.
But I do a lot of stuff at RNN, which is now spreading to a whole lot of cities out there. So
yeah. Well, check him out, folks. He's a smart man, good man. And every time you see Spider-Man, think of Rick Unger.
And every time you buy something that has Spider-Man, I'll be thinking of you.
Yeah, you will be thinking of him too, because he got 15 cents of that thing. All right, folks. Thanks again, Rick.
My folks, pleasure.
Now, always, man. So, folks, thanks again for being a part of the podcast. You know, do that download thing. You know how much I love it. It just makes me feel so yummy inside. When you do, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, you know where to find us. And certainly follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. Until next time, stay safe, stay warm, because it's getting chilly outside. And wear the damn mask. Stop the bullshit. Just wear the damn mask, because I want you here next week. All right, guys, take care. Later.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to LostGolfBalls.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. LostGolfBalls.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.